this is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor, and today I'm in Lincoln with Jason Savage, who runs Maine People Before Politics. Got it right?
Yeah.
Hi, Jason. How are you doing?
Wonderful, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good. So, you know, the reason I wanted to talk to you is to find out what it is you're working on. I know you're busy. You're all over the place. What is it you're working on that's important to us?
One of the things that we're really focusing on right now is the new Health and Human Services budget, and trying to get Maine to a place where we have a sustainable program, safety net, for the people who need it most, and trying to do that in a way that is smart, that protects the most vulnerable people, but also recognizes that we as a state can't afford to be paying way above average benefits when our people make below average wages. We really need to realign what we actually have and recognize what we have the ability to pay for, so that we're not asking too much of our citizens who are working and paying for those programs.
And how are we gonna do that?
Well, we need to really look at a lot of different things. We need to look at what the state can afford to provide. We need to realign and recognize the things that we can't afford to provide. Things such as extra services that, you know, the average working person doesn't get in their insurance plan. We really need to take a look at those. And we really need to get back to what our safety net programs were designed to be, which is a place to help people short-term when they get to a point where they need the help.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have been watching the expansion over a number of years and have seen what has gone from being a safety net for those who really need it to sort of a creeping growth into trying to control a lot of different things. And, you know, when the governor presented his budget proposal initially, within a couple of days, I got a phone call and an email. I got an email from a woman who said, this is the first time in my daughter's 14 years, her daughter was disabled, this is the first time in 14 years that there hasn't been a proposal to cut the funding that supports my daughter. I got another call from an elderly woman whose son is disabled and is an adult, who said, since 2003, they've been cutting my son's funding while they were adding 19 and 20-year-olds and expanding all these other programs, and I've been wondering, she said, I've been wondering when they were going to actually put him, make him a priority, and this time, they did. So, despite the fact that there was all this rhetoric flying around, there were some very important priorities in that budget where they recognized that finally state government is starting to recognize that there are people who truly cannot get by without our help. There are other people that there are times when it's appropriate to ask them to do more. And that's really what I saw. One of the most disappointing things that I saw with that budget proposal was that the governor made it very clear from before the public hearings began that he wanted to fix the PNMI
mm-hmm.
system, the private non-medical institution programs. He put a statement out. The media got that statement, but for weeks after the hearings, they continued to talk about the dangers of losing that system. Well, if anybody actually followed that debate, you would know that the funding for that program is designed and explicitly says it's for medical purposes. Yet the name of our program, the name of the funding is private non-medical.
Well, what does that include, Jason, just so my people know?
What's happened is that there was, from what I've read and talked to people in Augusta about, was that the state was bundling
mm-hmm.
how they were billing, and they were billing the federal government for medical expenses, but they were actually billing room and board, which would have fallen under housing or
rather than
right.
Medicaid.
So, you know, the governor's getting attacked. He's saying the reality is, and we owe him, you know, a lot of credit for actually telling the truth about that program.
Mm-hmm.
It's been getting dragged along and patched and Band-Aids put on it for years. We're billing medical expenses, or we're billing non-medical expenses, and we're doing it so openly that we're calling it a non-medical expense in our own program. We're billing the federal government for that. well, we need to fix that so that we comply, because only then will we actually have the peace of mind of knowing that those people will not have their services threatened in the future because of mistakes or
inappropriate
you know, misuse of funds. One of the things that has happened time and again from what I've seen is that the current administration has learned that they're, in the past, billing and the federal government and using the money in different ways was not accepted. I think it was $29 million last year that they had to fix Child Development Services education funding because it was being billed improperly. We need to get all of those programs in line and know what we actually have the ability to do. The governor's budget was a first step in recognizing that we were doing those things wrong, and for the peace of mind of the people receiving services and to do right by the taxpayers, he acknowledged the problem and said, let's fix it, and that was exactly the right thing to do. It's unfortunate that the media had to spend a couple of weeks beating up on him for telling the truth about what was wrong with that program, but that's what it is.
So how is that coming?
I think it's coming along. The 12 Senate Democrats last week voted down a compromise proposal which looked, you know, generally pretty good. It was unfortunate because that was a document that took a couple of months for them to come together on. It had broad support in the House, and at the last minute, the Senate Democrats, 12 of them, voted against it. I think there's, through this whole process, I think there's been a certain amount of denial about the problem, and I don't know if it was an unwillingness to look at the problem or an unwillingness to admit that the programs had not been handled properly in the past. But it's like there's still this level of denial among some people, and even though they had this coalition of people who supported this proposal, which really did bring some structural reform, it wasn't perfect. Not anybody really fell in love with it, but it was there. And now at once these Democrats vote against it, DHHS is going to run out of money in April. And here we are in mid to late February, still playing games with the budget. You have to wonder if it was because they truly thought that there was something that they could do better, or if it was about making a political statement, posturing the right way, and trying to stir up some more press, you know, about this. I think everybody recognizes that what the governor did was brave in that he knew he was going to take heat.
Right.
From the press and from all the various groups in the state that are going to attack him for it. But he put it out there because he knows that he promised to bring those things out when he became governor and fix them. We have a governor who's working on solutions, not on perpetuating problems so we can campaign on them again in a few years. I think that this is sort of the last attempt by some of those people who've really enjoyed the politics of this issue so much to try to drum it up for a few more days and make that last ditch effort to try to push for, you know, a punish the working people type of tax or something like that. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it has to go that way, because what they really had an opportunity to do was to be part of the solution instead of perpetuating the problem.
Right. And they didn't necessarily see it as an opportunity.
Even their leadership was there and willing to say, this is a good solution. We can put this matter to bed and move on. Let's give those people who are receiving services some peace of mind. Let's give those hospital employees who might face pink slips if they don't get paid, the hospitals aren't getting paid. Let's tell those parents of children who are disabled that program's going to be able to be there for them. And instead, what they've done is they've given all those people a four-day weekend to sit around and wonder what's happening and hope that the worst doesn't happen. If it had been anybody other than that group who voted against this budget, I would almost promise you would have seen headlines over the weekend about the catastrophic consequences of hospitals not receiving their funding in April because we couldn't get our act together. But it's kind of gone away quietly now, and we'll see what happens as we come back.
Well, is that going to be enough to get us? I mean, I spoke to Bruce Poliquin a couple of weeks ago, I guess, and he was talking about the fact that we're already spending next quarter's earnings on it. Revenue.
I think it will be enough as long as the part two of it, which is for fiscal year 13, can be fixed and reformed in an appropriate manner, because we were spending money ahead of time, and there is a component where we have to borrow money. We do a two-year budget, so you really have to look at the budget as a two-year document, which means that we may be able to fix 13 that helps make up for 412. The way that I see it, as long as we don't go into the next budget
behind, you know, again,
behind again, and we can actually have it fixed and contained here, I think that will be enough. We really need to recognize that until we see revenue growth at a level that we haven't yet, that we need to really be serious about bringing us down to spending within our means. And we can't keep looking outside of that component of the state budget, the health and human services component. We can't keep looking outside of that to find money to perpetuate or to sustain programs that we can't afford. What will happen is eventually our schools will take a hit, our infrastructure, transportation will take a hit. We as Mainers already know that in the past decade at least, we have not really been serious about funding education or funding transportation. And that's all happened. All of those things have been neglected at the expense of health and human services. It's really time to fix it there in health and human services so that we can do the right thing in the other places we need to prioritize spending.
So that's taken up all your time then?
We've really been working hard on that. We're doing a lot of other things statewide as far as the organization goes that aren't issues based, but just on an organizational level. We have coordinators in all 16 counties. We have volunteers in more than 350 cities and towns, right from, you know, Kittery to Fort Kent and across the state, everywhere. So there's a lot of work going on in getting people engaged and involved in the process. And I think that even though you don't see us with, you know, hundreds of people in the Hall of Flags, the legislators are hearing from our members on a regular basis. And I would like to think that we're creating a new wave of sort of civic engagement among people that otherwise felt like they didn't have a voice. I think that's been very successful so far. So we're working on that front a lot.
So you're bringing in people who really weren't engaged at all?
I get calls from people who are interested in what we're doing, who are not engaged, who don't necessarily really feel like they belong to a political party. They know what they believe, and they know that they like some of what's happening in Augusta, and they just appreciate having tools like we do on our website where they can reach out to their legislator quickly and easily. They work 9 to 5. They can't, you know, drive to Augusta for 2 o'clock hearings on Tuesdays. But, you know, like with the Appropriations Committee, we have a tool on our website where you can type a message and click send, and it goes to all of them. And a lot of them have been responding to people. So we're making it easy for people to be engaged. We're giving them information that I don't think that they ever really were able to get before, because it doesn't depend on what the media tells them, but it's details of, this is what you can do to help if you believe in this issue and you believe this needs to happen. You can contact these people and show your support. So they're learning about things before they happen instead of after they happen, which gives them the ability to be proactive. We've got a lot of people concerned about energy, who've been getting involved because they saw the referendum that was coming out, and they were concerned that we were going to keep seeing, you know, skyrocketing energy prices. And so they were saying, you know, your organization, your group was one of the first to speak out and say, hey, that's, you know, energy mandate's not a good idea. So they saw that, they recognized it, and they got involved. A lot of that.
Why don't you tell my listeners what the URL of your website is?
Oh, yes, it's www.mainpeoplebeforepolitics.com.
Thank you very much. And Jason, I'll be talking to you again, I hope, shortly, because you seem to be always really busy, and I really should catch up with you more often to hear exactly what's going on. But you're so busy, I feel bad about trying to contact you.
Oh, you contact me anytime. I always have time, and the busyness thing is just something that we all have to deal with.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
So that's it for today's interview, and I hope you all will stick around. for the next time we talk to someone who discusses what we're interested in north of Bangor.